Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
The sinking of the Titanic is a tragedy that has captivated generations of people since the horrible early morning hours of April 15th, 1912.
And joining us right now is author Veronica Hinkey, who's been researching the Titanic for as long as she can remember and has written about it in the new book, The Last Night on the Titanic, Unsinkable Drinking, Dining, and Style. The book takes us back in time to that fateful night, weaving food and drink recipes with true firsthand stories of how an elegant, sophisticated cruise became a nightmare.
Veronica, we thank you for joining us and would love for you to tell us why you decided to write The Last Night on the Titanic.
Hi, Jan and Laura. I'm looking forward to talking with you. And as to why I decided to write this book, you know, historically, I'm mostly a food writer, but also features, but mostly food. And throughout the years that I've had a culinary journey as a food reporter, it's always been at the core, at the heart of every food story, it's always been about the people. And there are some amazing people that we're going to talk about today who were aboard the Titanic, and they had ties to food, fashion, cooking, all sorts of different culinary and style related things. But at the core of each story is how they persevered. You know, even those that didn't survive were survivors in so many ways that night and into that early morning for many of them. These are people who looked in the face of death. And we look at their lives through the lens of culinary and fashion and different types of style. But for your audience, for the people that are listening to this episode, it's really inspiring to hear about how these people went through this amazing experience.
Can you paint for us the scene and the style, the atmosphere, the music, and the energy that was going on the Titanic?
Well, there were several different things going on all at once with the three different classes. And in first class, which is really probably the best known legacy of what was happening there, there was incredible opulence. You know, the dinner had just completed a few hours earlier before the Titanic struck the iceberg. And the dinner had just completed. You know, they just experienced this incredible multi-course dinner, which was customary in first class aboard the Titanic and other ships at the time. And in other classes, they had experienced a larger meal in the middle of the day in steerage, for instance. That was the way the third class passengers lived. Their heavier meal was midday. That's when you saw the beef and brown gravy and the really heavy meal. And then in the evening, it was really more like heavy snacks in third class. You know, the fashion was obvious all around. There were long skirts on ladies, tuxedos on men in first class. In steerage, there was a much more casual look. The newspaper boy cap was popular then and probably one of the most popular caps that you would see. And it was just a very different experience. But in all three classes, the service and the accommodations and food were still much better than on other ships at the time.
And you write that the Titanic set the tone for luxury in her time and that many of the simple joys of our modern world today were pioneered by people who played a crucial role on the Titanic, some of the passengers and others. Tell us more about that.
Yes, like for instance, there was an electric sorbet maker. There was a man on board, a very young man, just 19 years old. He's an example of some of the amazing people who operated these state-of-the-art tools. His name was Adolf Mattmann. He was from Innwil, Switzerland. And to give kind of a glimpse of what this experience was like for these people, how pivotal this experience of working aboard the Titanic was with its state-of-the-art engineering and tools, he had told his parents, after I make this crossing, I have to make this crossing because I will be able to get any job in culinary in any of the best hotels in London. And so that really gives us an insight as to what this meant to people to be working on the Titanic because of its state of the art, especially in culinary, in everything. But for what we're looking at, the culinary aspects were really unbelievable.
And what ended up happening to him?
He did not survive. many culinary workers and kitchen workers did not survive. In fact, there was a headline during the British inquiry that ran that said Titanic cooks drowned like rats. And that was because many of them were not allowed to get onto the boat deck because they were not considered crew or passengers at the time. They were employed by an Italian entrepreneur named Luigi Gatti. Many of them were, not all of them. But the ones that worked in the French eating areas where French cuisine was available, they were employed by him and they were considered concessionaires. So they were stopped by the crew as they tried to get onto the boat deck. We don't know for sure if that is what happened to Adolf Mattmann, but he very easily could have been swept up in that experience with so many of the kitchen workers.
Tell us about the woman who became known as the unsinkable Molly Brown.
I'm glad you asked about Molly Brown because she is amazing. Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers from the popular TV show, he shared with everyone that his mother told him that when there's a disaster, Fred, she said, always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers. And in the case of the Titanic, there certainly were. And one of the most obvious helpers was Margaret or Molly Brown. Molly Brown, when she was facing fear herself, she could have been just thinking of herself and she thought of others while she was escaping the Titanic. And she boarded a lifeboat with other women and she encouraged them to row to stay warm, which I thought was really neat to see in someone who was facing possible death herself and was out in the middle of this dark ocean. It was close to 2 a.m. They were out in the lifeboat together for hours until the Carpathia picked them up. And then once she was aboard the Carpathia, Molly Brown led a group of other first-class passengers in honoring Captain Rostron of the Carpathia and his crew for getting through the iceberg-infested waters. They were all around the Titanic, and the Carpathia braved through those waters when they didn't have to. You know, they wanted to go and try to help save people. And so Molly really led that effort. She was incredible that way and thought of other people at a time when, you know, it would have been easy for anyone to just think, well, I'm just going to think about myself. Right now, I'm going to just sit here with a blanket around me and feel sorry for myself. And she didn't do that. So to me, that is a great reminder in many ways in life to be brave for others.
And you say that although she survived the sinking of the Titanic, she could never escape the terror and the haunting of that night. What happened afterwards?
Well, and so many people I came across in my research for this book experienced that. There was one man from England, Adolfo Selfeld, and he was one of the few men who survived because, you know, it was women and children first. That was a very important part of this. Not every man was welcome in a lifeboat, but he saw a spot that was open and did not see any women or children around. And he took a spot in the lifeboat and saved his life. But he, like Molly and all of the survivors, life was never the same. They were haunted by that night. He had to, many nights, have his chauffeur, Pat, drive him all night through the streets of London to try to get to sleep. That's how hard it was for people to move on from the Titanic experience.
Wow.
We love having you as part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. We know a lot of you want to be your own boss or already operate your own business. That's why we want you to know about Shopify.
Hear that? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify and the moment another business dream becomes reality.
Shopify puts you in control of every sale channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered.
Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best Converting Checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers.
Once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nobody, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/nobody to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/nobody.
You also write about a case of, I think, 3 or 4 different people on board who either had a premonition that they wouldn't survive the trip or a fortune teller had predicted their deaths in water. Can you tell us more about those?
Right. There was an element of that. And there was also something else that was sort of mystical. It was the whole experience. On the Sunday evening, April 14th, the night that the Titanic struck the iceberg, she struck the iceberg at 11:40 p.m. And much earlier in the evening, a group of second-class passengers had organized a hymn service. And it was an impromptu thing. It really taught me the lesson to think of doing things like this because you never know what's going to happen and how this might have inspired people that they had just gotten together to have a hymn service and sing hymns that were uplifting and instrumental to them, possibly when they a few hours later would face this tragedy. And during that hymn service, it was just amazing how the songs were songs with themes tied to survival. And many people reflected after they were rescued that that was interesting, that by some coincidence, they had that hymn service. It wasn't scheduled. And it helped bring so many of these people together. I know a friend of mine had a hymn service last summer and invited me to it. And I felt so uplifted and refreshed from it afterward that I kind of know what that must have been like for people, but to have just come off of that experience and to be a little better prepared for facing what they faced that night.
There were many special passengers on board, but a story that I really like is that of President Taft's aide, Archie Butt, who really helped a lot of women and children get off the sinking ship. Can you tell us more about his story?
Yes, Archibald Butt did not survive. He is, in this book, a really interesting featured person because he had a New Year's Day party every year. And he had Virginia ham, because he lived in Virginia, obviously, and biscuits and eggnog. And he made a beautiful eggnog and wrote letters to people about it. And there's a lot of information about his entertaining skills in the book. And what I love about it is what you mentioned about how he helped people. He did not survive. He was really seriously looking death right in the face on that night. And Marie Young, who lived in Washington, D.C., also recalled later on after she was rescued and she survived and said that he wrapped blankets around her and he did it like as carefully as if we were starting on a motor ride. And I love that picture she paints. And I think of the gallantry of Major Butt, even at a time like this when, you know, he could have been, like I was talking about earlier, could have been cowering away, feeling sorry for himself. He knew he was a man, probably wasn't going to survive. Even the richest man aboard the ship did not survive, John Jacob Astor IV. And they bravely bid adieu to their spouses and their friends and women that they had gotten to know on the ship. Marie Young said that she could see Major Butt's good, brave, smiling face at her from the deck of the ship as she pulled away in the lifeboat. And as I mentioned, the lifeboats, that's interesting too. These people had to be incredibly brave just to get into a lifeboat. You didn't just step in there were many instances where people had to jump several levels down to get into a lifeboat. In many cases, people were trampled because people would jump into the lifeboat when there were already people in them, and it would be easy to fall on someone. So it was very risky. Sometimes the lifeboats were tilted, and there were many stories I came across where people had to be almost pushed into the lifeboats. Some of the women did. In fact, the story of Edith Rosenbaum Russell, the fashion reporter, she is featured in the story because of her incredible influence in fashion at the time. And we talk about fashion and style in the book. Edith said that she did not want to get into that lifeboat. And finally, they got her to get into it. And she brought with her a music box that was a pig. When you wound the tail of the pig, it played the Mexique. And she is another inspiring person to me because she played that music box for the children in the lifeboat all morning long. And morning came around, she was playing this music box for the children, which I just thought that was really neat to think of how scared she must have been and the horror she went through of getting into the lifeboat and how difficult it was. And she was there to help others. She said she was really famous for saying, "I'm accident prone. I've been in shipwrecks, car crashes, fires, floods, and tornadoes. I've had every disaster but bubonic plague and a husband."
Tell us about the story of the elderly couple Isidore and Ida Strauss.
So there's another really inspiring story for people that are looking for examples of how to live your best life. This was a couple that were really dedicated to one another and beyond dedicated to death. To death do us part. They were seen in James Cameron's Titanic movie, cuddled in bed as the Titanic sunk. And that was one of the things in the movie that wasn't quite spot on. It was, you know, a little glamorized with that image of them in bed together, but they were actually on the boat deck. And they too are featured in my book because of their incredible contributions to style, fashion, food, and other style, especially through their involvement in Macy's.
And how did they face death?
They stayed together on the boat deck. And as was the case with so many of the people that did not get into lifeboats, they were very likely swept up by a wave and carried into the waters.
I was wondering how four women ended up dying, even though they were in first class, because I know that's not a very big number, but I was still surprised to see that anybody did.
And that's a good point you bring up, because there are people that are surprised that at first people didn't want to get into the lifeboats. They were thinking that this was going to be a non-event. This was, you know, not a big deal, that everything was going to be okay. So there were instances of people that weren't able to get into lifeboats, even though they could have.
And what about Edith Evans? What was her story?
Well, Edith Evans was in the library just before the Titanic struck the iceberg. The library closed at 11:30, and she said she had just dropped off some letters with the clerk to be mailed in the morning and went to bed. And then she felt the Titanic, you know, hit the iceberg. She could feel a strange sensation, and she went up onto the boat deck. And as I was mentioning earlier, she was one of the ones who was very reticent about jumping, and she had 19 trunks with her. And so as she recounted her story after surviving, she admitted she was concerned about her things. Any of us would have been. And what was really remarkable about her account is that there's always been this question over what was the band playing as the Titanic sunk. And in her recollection and in her estimation, it could not have been the song "Nearer My God to Thee." In fact, she was horrified when she was talking to a BBC reporter about it, because she said, well, of course they wouldn't have been playing "Nearer My God to Thee," because it would have put a sense of fear and demise into the passengers, which of course they would not have wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So there's still a wide discussion about what exactly they were playing. And Edith Russell contributed to that with her account to the BBC.
But didn't some people contend that they were playing "Nearer My God to Thee"?
Yes, there were some people who thought that they heard that, and the debate continues on that.
You know, one of my favorite characters from the Titanic, from the movie, was Captain Smith. And I know that he had a dinner party the night of the sinking. Can you tell us about that and about who he was as a person and what his experience would have been that night?
Captain Smith was seen by someone, they believed it was him, swimming the backstroke with a baby out to a lifeboat. Wow. And that was the last account anyone had heard of him. Someone asked me just the other day, was he inebriated? Had he been drinking? And everything I read about him, all the research I did about him, which was extensive over the years, I do not believe personally that he was drinking. He was very old school, and he went down with his ship. He was a gentleman to the end by all accounts, and a very reputable captain. He was chosen for that crossing because it was Titanic's maiden voyage. This was the first time she was going across the ocean, and he had been aboard the Olympic, which was Titanic's sister ship. And the Olympic was very similar to the Titanic, but she sort of went first, and then they got the kinks out of the things that they noticed and made it perfection on the Titanic based on, she was sort of like the test ride, the model to follow, the Titanic would follow her. And so you see him going from that ship as captain, and he was also in an emergency situation aboard the Olympic. And then to be asked to go over to the Titanic was a real statement to his prowess and his ability to lead a team and captain a ship. So everything I have seen and know of him would have definitely not have supported that he had been drinking. I think there was drinking going on at the dinner, which was in the first class dining room. So there were other diners around this dinner. This dinner was at a table in the middle of a lot of different tables. And the one big difference is that the menu that night for that dinner was different than what other first class passengers were eating. Now, we all are very familiar with some of the items that are on the menu from that last first class dinner, those things that people were eating around Captain Smith's retirement dinner. And what we don't know is what was on the menu for that dinner. There were never any firsthand accounts. It was hosted by the Wideners of Philadelphia. And there were several other people they had invited for this special dinner. There were toasts to the Titanic that were being made around the special dinner at other tables. And, you know, it was a very joyous occasion. That night, people described as having been one of the most joyous nights on the Titanic.
Wow. Who else do you admire based on the research that you've done in terms of the survivors and the people who didn't survive?
Well, one of the most inspiring people to me was the Chief Baker. And we see the Chief Baker in Hollywood movies, either James Cameron's movie or A Night to Remember from the 1950s. And we see him as this sort of comic relief character that you might recognize. You might be able to think of him right now as I'm describing him. He had the Baker cap on.
Right.
Like I said, sort of a comical looking figure, you know, running up the poop deck at the end, which is true to the story, but probably wasn't wearing a Baker cap. But what we don't know about him is the story of the real man. And I was able to research that, and it was just so inspiring to do that. His story is incredible. First of all, I want to clarify that his great niece was able to confirm for me that it wasn't whiskey that he was drinking. He said it was schnapps. So for all these years, people have thought it was whiskey. As Chief Baker, Charles Jochen would have had access to yeast and, you know, fruits and things where he could have made his own schnapps or whiskey or a variety of alcohols in his quarters. And that was very common back then with ship crews to have these jerry-rigged stills in their crew bunks. And so what happened that I found most extraordinary to learn about is what happened to him right before he started drinking that night. He had been assigned to man a lifeboat. He had looked up his lifeboat assignment, his crew assignment, on the Thursday before the sinking. Just because he had been in other accidents, he had spent a life at sea since he was a little boy. He went to work at sea because he had to. Even before he was in his teens, he was out working. If you can imagine, you know, sending your little boy off to work at the sea before he was even 12 years old. And so he had been through amazing experiences and knew to look to see where his lifeboat would be if he needed to crew a lifeboat, staff a lifeboat. And when the Titanic struck the iceberg. He went straight away into his checklist. He started getting loaves of bread sent up with his crew to the lifeboat so that they'd have food to eat. That was part of the standard procedure. And then he went up and started helping board the lifeboats, getting people into them, because as I explained earlier, it wasn't as simple as just stepping into another boat. It was really complicated. So he went upstairs and boarded some lifeboats, and then he helped board the lifeboat that he had been assigned to, but he never got the command to board the lifeboat as crew. And when he came to that realization that, hey, I'm not getting in a lifeboat, that was when he went back down to his quarters. And as he told the British inquiry officials, he said, I went downstairs and had a nip. So then he comes back upstairs to the boat deck, sees all the deck chairs on the deck, and he thinks to himself, you know, if I'm going to be in that water, which was like below 30 degrees, they were freezing waters. He thought, if I throw all these deck chairs into the water, I will maybe have something to hold on to when I'm out there. So he started throwing deck chairs out into the water. And then his story goes on. Once the waves come that send him into the ocean, he can't get onto a lifeboat. They're all full. He's trying to even hang onto one. And it takes several tries for him to find a space where he can hang on. And finally, he finds a lifeboat where he recognizes someone from his staff. And that's a good life lesson, too. It's always good to be the kind of person that people are going to want to help if you need help, because that wasn't happening in every case in all the stories that I saw. And so one man said, take my hand. You can hold on to my hand while I'm holding on to this lifeboat. And then he's able to get onto a lifeboat. Finally, after that, another lifeboat pulls along where there's space, and he is rescued by the Carpathia. And I just am amazed by his story because of all that he went through. And it was like, he just kept going. He didn't let anything deter his enthusiasm for survival.
And I was surprised to read about how prized oranges were at the time of the Titanic sinking, and how some of the passengers took oranges with them as they left the ship for the lifeboats.
Yes, and it's interesting because today we really take things like that for granted, oranges, pineapples, and other fruits, and we take those things for granted. But this was a time when an orange was a luxury. That's why we have a study in the book on oranges, and we focus on a cocktail that really highlights oranges. You can make it either with orange juice in it or orange peel for a little delicate orange flavor. And it's the Bronx, which was very popular during pre-Prohibition when the Titanic sailed. And these days, we just don't see much of it. So I was really delighted to be able to keep that legacy alive in the book. And we have recipes from Frank Caiafa, who was the bar manager at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City before it closed for renovations. And Frank contributed two recipes for the Bronx. They're both from his book. He redid the Waldorf Astoria bar book, and they're both from that book. One of them is with a little bit of orange juice, and another one is with some orange peel that he snaps to release the oils. It has no orange juice in it, but just a little faint touch of orange. And then it's made with gin and sweetened dry vermouth. So it's a lovely cocktail. I actually like it. Instead of a mimosa with orange juice and champagne, it's a nice, a little bit drier cocktail to have for a brunch or breakfast.
And Veronica, we always ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? And you've done so much research on guests on the Titanic, and I'm sure you have a great nobody told me lesson to give us.
Yeah, well, I guess nobody told me how amazing these people were, whether they were on the Titanic or off the Titanic. Nobody told me how inspired I'd be by them. I was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer a few months ago, and my mother had just died out of the blue when she was in perfect health. I very suddenly found out she passed away, and that was just a few months before I was diagnosed with my breast cancer. And nobody told me how much these people would inspire me to get through so much of that while I was writing their stories and researching their stories. And nobody told me how much I would benefit from this research and from hearing about people like Charles Jochen and these people who stayed strong and stayed amazing through this incredible journey. It was always about honoring these people and their stories. And I just really hope that we've done a good job of that. I think we have, and I hope everyone else agrees.
Yeah, and this book is so unique and so wonderful, and that it really does inspire you with so many different stories of different people from different walks of life who survived or didn't survive, but really were inspirational people. So we really thank you for that, for having such a great book, and we really hope people will go and buy the book, and that is called The Last Night on the Titanic, Unsinkable Drinking, Dining, and Style. And Veronica, how can people connect with you on social media and on the internet if they want to learn more about the book?
Well, the book is available on websites for Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and Amazon. And I'm on Instagram. My Instagram handle is foodstringer. And I'm also on Twitter. And I'm on LinkedIn. People can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always open to that as well. And Facebook.
Okay, great. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Our thanks to author Veronica Hinke. Again, her new book is called The Last Night on the Titanic, Unsinkable Drinking, Dining, and Style. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.